Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Optimistic. That's the nothing personal word of the day. It is Monday, March 4th, 2024. Optimism. That is the fuel that keeps sports executives going every day when you're in the middle of a crap season or in the middle of major injuries. You're always optimistic. Our replacements are going to be just as good as the injured players. Or we've lost a bunch in a row, but we're totally going to be fine. Let me do the math. We're not eliminated yet. Optimism. It is arguably even more important than your ability to evaluate is your ability to be optimistic. Well, this past weekend, the Atlanta Braves have required a huge dose of optimism as their superstar, Ronald Acuña, is hurt again. This is the reigning MVP of the National League. This is the player who was the centerpiece of the greatest offense in baseball, better than the Dodgers without Otani, better than the Dodgers with Otani, better than just about any other team. No, better than every team. Combining with the pitching staff that now has Chris Sale, who has a spring training renaissance going on. Please ignore that. Please. No, not the show. Ignore when you see releases that Chris Sale has three starts with five hits and no runs and 10 strikeouts and one walk. Who cares? There is nothing more meaningless than spring training stats. Don't let it further your narrative about whether you think this guy's good or this guy's bad. Stanton stinks. He's hitting 100 at your own risk. Soto's got a 2,600 OPS. This guy's the MVP, the greatest Yankee to ever don pinstripes. It is so ridiculous to correlate spring training performance to regular season performance. Just watch. However, injuries are a different can of wax, a different ball of beans. So Acuña is in a rundown, hurts his knee. The call goes to Anthopoulos. Hey, get him out of the game. Precautionary. Let's see what happens when he wakes up. Let's not panic. Remember, he missed a season, had surgery, tore his ACL. Remember that. Wakes up the next morning. How you doing? I remember those phone calls. Spring training's different than the regular season. You are at the ballpark during spring training at 6 a.m. It is your routine. You're there at 6 a.m. The players sprinkle in. The trainer's there already because there's afternoon games every day. So everything is different in terms of your schedule. The players always wanted, and so did the staff, side note, more night games so they could get on the routine of the season. And we would have like one night game a spring. They've started to have a few more night games, but in general, spring training games are afternoon. So it really does throw off your entire routine. It's strange how routine the baseball is, but you do get into the day routine for spring training, which is in the office at 6 a.m. You go right down to the clubhouse. You go right into the training room. Hey, is Acuña in yet? No, coming in. All right, let's get a bat in his hand. All right, get him in the cage. How's he doing? How does he look? Let me feel him. Let me look at his knee. All right, let's do some BP. Ah, criminy. We walk out to the main field. He's doing BP. It doesn't look right. His swing is a little off. And when you see that, you immediately pull him. It's called getting scratched. But what it is getting panicked because something looks off. So then you look at Acuña and say, all right, we need to get you an MRI. He got an MRI Friday. What the Braves are having you think is that they have no idea what's going on. They're waiting till he goes to LA Monday, today, to go see the doctor who committed the surgery, Dr. Neil Eletrage. prime number one doctor, does UCLs, does a bunch of stuff. One of the best in the business. So what the Braves would have you think, and they had Brian Snitker, their manager, give you the talking point. Right now, we're trying to be optimistic, is what Snitker said Saturday. Maybe just a couple weeks or whatever, just to calm everything down. But honestly, I don't know until we get what the doctor out there says. News alert to everyone who watches Nothing Personal. You know how this works. As president of a team, I am not waiting until Monday when he has the MRI Friday. He's in the tube. He's out of the tube. The results are given to my team doctor, my trainer. I see them. Then they are sent electronically to the doctor in LA. The doctor in LA looks at them. I don't care if he's on vacation. I don't care if he's in surgery. We're going to have the doctor on Friday. Dr. Neil Eletrage will look at that MRI and then will tell me, David, it looks torn. I mean, I'll look at him Monday, but just be ready. I think the meniscus is torn. David, doesn't look bad at all. I think there's some swelling. I had great work in there. It's some scar tissue. We're going to let it calm down. Hey, David, we're going to do a little P. Then we're going to replace with some P. And then we'll have some R. 4 weeks. And then all's good. Not ready for opening day, but he should be ready to go May 1. Hey, David, you may want to consider what you're going to do because my guess is you're looking at 3 to 4 months. It's done. Atlanta has the info. When we send a player to a doctor in another state, it's merely for the doctor to put his hands on something to confirm what he's already diagnosed through the electronic information disseminated to him from the MRI or from the X-ray that we've sent. That's what he does when he's in person with the player. He's got the player there. He's got the MRI right up on the board, and he's looking around. Yeah, looks pretty torn to me. Remember, Acuña tore his ACL, same knee, 2021. So what do we think is going to happen here? If you're the Braves, it's just not good. Because when you've got a long-term commitment, if you were a free agent coming up next year, you weren't going to re-sign him. We'd encourage him, hey, just suck it up. Take some Toradol. We'll give you some shots. Just get out there. Let's go. We'll rest you from time to time. We'd like you to play, you know, 130 games, 120 to 130. We can work in an IL somewhere in August so that you're fresh for September, October. But we'll map out your season for you. But when he's your player signed long-term and there's risk of missing even more time if he has to have a little cleanup, a little surgery, my vote would be, and I've had this argument with baseball people and with owners, my vote would be now. I don't like the treatment where players who have a torn UCL say, I'm going to pitch through it. I'm going to be the one guy. I'll be Tanaka. It'll all work fine. Just give me an injection and let me work through it. It never works. It's always Tommy John. And then we're just delayed. So my vote would be if Acuña needs the surgery, get it now. See if he can come back toward the end of the season. This is an issue with these contracts. Atlanta gets tons of credit for signing all these guys long-term. All these teams get loved on by fans and agents for all these decades-long deals. But no one ever focuses on the reality of performance and the ability to maintain performance and how few players actually do maintain performance over a long period of time. Now, this is not impugning Acuña's deal or his talent, but it is the facts of life, Tootie, that long-term deals generally don't work, even when you feel like they're working. Which brings me to a Monday morning with Boras. Yeah, I had a good weekend because one of his other clients got signed. Matt Chapman, congratulations. You are the new owner of the booby prize from the San Francisco Giants, where Scott Boras throws clients, where people try to sign for short periods of time because they don't get anything anywhere else. You remember, Coca? Hi, my name is David Sampson. What is the name of the player who just signed the 3-year deal? Cody Bellinger. Golly. Just another manic Monday. Wish it were Sunday. Cody Bellinger got a 1+1+1=3 for $80 million from the Cubs. That means he can opt out after 1 year, after 2 years, or the Cubs are stuck with $80 million for an underperforming player. Matt Chapman just signed a 1+1+1. Sound familiar? Same agent, same construct, same concept, but only for $54 million. Matt Chapman, 3 years, 54, the exact same structure. He is a San Francisco Giant. Yes, that same team who did sign Jorge Soler this year from the Marlins, free agent. The same team that wanted Correa and then failed him. Wanted Judge, couldn't get him. They love being in the free agent fight. I did, Coca, I did San Francisco radio the other day. And I asked them, do you like being a bridesmaid? Does it feel good that you're in the mix? Or would you rather be a team that never bids for anybody? No expectation you'll get anybody. Or do you want to bid for everybody and get nobody? And this gets right to the heart of my favorite philosophical concept of being a consequentialist. What's the difference between the Marlins and the Giants if they're getting the same nobody? Now, but David, the Giants got Soler. Now the Giants got Chapman. The Giants are rolling. Sneaky good offseason. Passing by the Diamondbacks, Padres, and Dodgers. Sneaking by the Diamondbacks and Padres. No. Sneaking by the Padres. No. Sneaking by nobody. Don't worry, though. I wonder whether Chapman called up Conforto or Boris had Conforto call Chapman and say, hey, this is a great plan, I'm telling you. These little 1+1 deals are brilliant. San Francisco is amazing. Great ballpark, great ownership, great manager. Bruce Bochy's the best. Oh, Bob Melvin's the best. Oh. You know what's great about Boris and the Giants? He's like their bailout team. Desperation. Farhan, please do me a solid. Sign my guy. Farhan did a press conference. He said, hey, I'm telling you, we're in in-season mode. We're done. We're not taking on any more players. We're good. After he signed Soler, he said the same thing. After he signs Chapman, he said, we're done. Same exact thing he said after Soler, except then he signed Chapman. If you're an agent and you hear a team saying you're done, but then they sign another guy, it means you're not done. Boris needs to find a taker for Snell. He needs to find a taker for Montgomery. There is no doubt the Giants could use another starting pitcher. As a matter of fact, 30 teams could use another starting pitcher. What I liked about Farhan's comment, though, is when he discussed, quote, in-season mode versus off-season mode. I want to explain to you the difference between the two. Because GMs will try to talk and they'll try to speak in tongues and sound overly intelligent and sound like, oh, they can, they're the only ones who can do this job because it's like solving peace in the Middle East. Off-season mode, I don't know if that popped the microphone. I hope it didn't, Coco. Off-season mode is when you are doing roster construction. You are taking the budget as given to you by the team president, and you are allocating the resources in that budget in the short and long term. You are getting your coaching staff together. You're getting your development staff together. You are making handbooks and plans, and you're doing philosophies. You're setting up spring training. You're going on vacation. That's off-season mode. In-season mode, you are being reactive to things that happen during the course of a season, injuries, lack of performance, the end of delusion, the start of delusion. You are taking what is in front of you and you are testing each and every day how it correlates to what you thought was going to be in front of you during a particular game, week, month, or season. But roster construction is a huge part of in-season activity. Look at the number of transactions teams do. You're sending people out. You're putting people on the injured list. You're moving people around in transactions that you never even see. When we're moving guys from single A to double A, from double A down to single A, from single A to triple A, we have the rotation that we know who's starting in single A, double A, triple A. So we know who we may need in the major leagues. Are they rested? How many pitchers are they throwing? It's not like you're running just your major league team in season. You're running your major league team and all of your minor league teams. And it's supposed to, in an ideal world, be like a symphony where the GM is the conductor. The lead violinist is your head of player development, the one who's taking the cues from you and then disseminating them throughout the orchestra. And when it works well, it's a song of perfection, except there's people blowing bullhorns all the time during the course of a season. And the bullhorns are the injuries. The bullhorns are the owner who wants to do something that you don't want to do. The bullhorns are the HR issues that you have with players or with staff. There's always people clanging a drum. But when it's quiet and nice, in season is a beautiful thing. But when opportunities present themselves in season, which are no different than the off-season opportunities that come from an agent and a free agent, in-season opportunities come from agents when they call and say, hey, I think my guy's available, my guy's unhappy. You should, let's talk about it, tampering. A GM calls and says, hey, let's talk. I got this guy ready to move. The owner says, hey, we got to move this guy. There's all sorts of different things that happen in season that are all roster construction based. So we would never ask our GM to publicly say that either we're in in-season mode, we're in off-season mode, we're in the market for any more guys, we're not in the market for any more guys. My view is we say nothing because we could be a day away from the owner saying, hey, here's an extra $20 million out of nowhere, and I wanted only if we can get Montgomery on a 1+1, let's slot him into the rotation. Why can't that happen? I don't want Boris to know that that's even a possibility. I don't want our fan base to know that's a possibility. I don't want any part of that. Meanwhile, we're 16 days away from the start of the regular season. There are two pitchers available who could help both the teams going to Korea. Spoiler alert, the Cy Young Award winner was on one of the teams going to Korea, and he won't be coming back. I like that. Farhan said, we're really focused on the players that we have and how they're going to fit together, as opposed to focused on the players we don't have. Come on, Farhan. Be better than that. As GMs or presidents, we're not just focused on our own team. Why do we carry around a list of every player on every 40-man roster in Major League Baseball? Why are we always looking at which puzzle pieces fit on our roster every day? It's all we talk about. All right, we come back. Let's take a break, Coco. We come back. We are going to review one of the best movies I've seen this year, and I have to change my top five for the year now. And then we have a So You Want to Talk to Samson about college. And yes, we are going to get to Caitlin Clark. We'll be right back.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I was asked to make a top five list for movies I've seen this year. I had The Holdovers number one. I had Barbie number two. And now the Oscars are coming this Sunday. We will be in Miami live from the stained carpet. Me, Adnan Virk, and Ben Lyons. We're doing a pre-show. We'll have a watch party during the show. We'll be on the air from 4 o'clock on Sunday. on Levitard's YouTube channel, all part of Levitard. I'll be doing the Levitard show Friday from Miami. Nothing personal Friday from Miami. We'll be back doing Levitard Monday, so I'll do nothing personal a week from today from the Miami studios. I've got my blank ballot right here. It's got to get filled out because we're going to be disclosing all of my picks on the pre-show. 4 o'clock live Sunday, live from the stained carpet. I also do a contest with my kids. This is a tough year. Best Picture has 10 pictures in it. American Fiction, seen and reviewed. Anatomy of a Fall, seen and reviewed. Barbie, seen and reviewed. The Holdovers, yes. Killers of the Flower Moon, seen and reviewed. Maestro, seen and reviewed. Oppenheimer, twice, seen and reviewed once. Past Lives, seen and reviewed. That leaves two. Zone of Interest, watch this week, reviewing tomorrow. Poor Things, watch this weekend, reviewing right now. That's all 10. Plus all the other nominations for Poor Things. Can we talk about this movie for 1 minute? Because it is... I want to give you the right word. The right word is, are you willing to watch a movie where you look at Willem Dafoe and you look at Mark Ruffalo and you look at Emma Stone and you say to yourself, this likely can't happen. It is surreal. It is part dystopic, Ozempic. The performance is so over the top. The premise is so insane. It is so quirky and strange. I hated The Lobster. I love The Lobster, but you may be saying that. The Favorite was mind-blowing. I'm saying that. You may think differently. Olivia Colman won the Oscar for it. Emma Stone in that too. Oscar-worthy performance, if not having won the Oscar for that or nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Poor Things is about a woman who is almost the monster from Frankenstein. Sort of. It's sort of like 13 going on 30. Sort of. It's sort of like what it's like when there is a baby's brain in a woman's body and a man who's very much in control, but not in a sexual way. And then there's another man who wants to own the woman who's sort of owned by yet another man. And then there's a third guy who's assigned a babysitter, but then ends up maybe with her, maybe without her. How am I doing? Poor Things, certainly in the top five of any movie I've seen this year. I may have to put it above The Holdovers. There wasn't one frame of the 140-minute movie. It was 2 hours and 20 minutes. There wasn't one frame, 1 minute, where I turned away, watched it straight through, zero checks of the phone. There's a lot of talk of all of the nudity in it because Emma Stone spends many, many scenes naked and people are focused on that. And I can't figure it out for the life of me. Just like when I was watching Saturday Night Live this weekend, the obsession over Sydney Sweeney, her chest being naked, not being naked. Oh, it's the most views SNL clips have ever had. Because of Sydney Sweeney. I guess it's just different. I grew up where bodies, naked bodies, were far more acceptable than guns. And yet so many kids grow up where their parents say, oh my God, it's a nipple. Go back to playing with your AR-15. I haven't quite figured that one out yet. Seen Emma Stone naked. It's part of the art of the movie. It has to be that way. Her character has to be. It's not gratuitous. The sex in the movie is a critical part of the movie. Yet people are saying, wow, an Oscar winner willing to get naked. What does that say about her? Just like with Sydney Sweeney, someone with that body, normally you'd have a body double. Like Julia Roberts in Notting Hill describing the body double to Hugh Grant. I have an idea. Wouldn't it be amazing if we all treated nudity for what it was, which is just, hey, we all have breasts and nipples. We're all naked at least once a day. Some of us twice a day. Depends how good things are going. Wouldn't it be great if we treated nudity differently than violence, which is just part of the everyday life that we live that has bled from on camera to off camera? Wouldn't it be better if it's the nudity that went from on camera to off camera instead of the gun violence? I don't know. Poor things. You better go see it. A, if you're going to watch the Oscars, and if you want to see one of the best performances maybe that I've seen. All right. Oh, this is a good one, Coca. Play it.
You know what I want? I want to talk to Samson.
So you want to talk to Samson. First of all, thank you so much for rating, reviewing, and telling your friends about Nothing Personal. February was a fantastic month for us. Every month keeps getting better, so keep spreading the word. So you want to talk to Samson. For those of you, February, 7.9% of you, this is what this segment is. It is from a movie called Half-Baked, and that is a character named Samson, and people want to talk to him. So get in my Twitter at David P. Samson, hit follow, and enjoy the fun that we have on X, or you can go to davidsamsonpodcast.com, where you get all of our podcasts, previous, current, all the merch you could ever want, except for the 4869 shirts. Anybody alive out there for the 4869 shirts? Can I get one help from anyone? Ask a question, and maybe it will make the show. Hello, David. It's an awesome way to start. People are catching on. I listened to your podcast with John Skipper and Pablo. Side note, thank you. That's called The Sporting Class. It comes out on Fridays, but not every Friday. Maybe not even every other Friday. It's whenever Pablo, John, and I can be in the same place because we've decided with Coca producing, yet another thing Coca's asked to do for not one extra additional penny, where we decide, I'm trying for you, Coca, maybe around bonus time, where we talk about sports business issues and Pablo sort of moderates me and John as we navigate some issues. You should check it out. One just got released, I think this past Friday, but I'm not sure. I listened to your podcast with John Skipper and Pablo. Did you know about the 14-team format and the two byes for the SEC and Big Ten? Question mark. All right. I lose. Let me explain. Let me get you a little inside the podcast world. We recorded that show on Wednesday, and we released it on a Friday. So anything that happens Wednesday night or Thursday is not something that we part of the show. Then we have to have the discussion. Do we edit out that part? Do we keep it in? Do we just assume that fans will understand that it wasn't live and we didn't have the information? Do we record a little intro? Hi, my name's David Samson. While you may think we're going to discuss the 14-team format with the two byes, one by the SEC, one by the Big Ten, we didn't do it here, but we'll do it at a later episode and maybe during Nothing Personal. That's one way to do it. Or we could ignore it and wait for So You Want to Talk to Samson, which is what we did. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about it in conjunction with the Sporting Class. Let me explain. We did a lot of talking about CFP and how many teams and whether it was going to be worth it. Are there going to be, will the SEC and Big Ten, will they somehow escape and become a super league? What are the impacts of that? We had some pretty significant disagreement over whether or not that'll happen. And then information came out that Tony Petitti, my man, the commissioner of the Big Ten, has a brilliant idea. We will agree to a 14-team playoff. This is the CFP, where instead of what it is now, four teams, where FSU gets screwed, which they didn't, but pretend they did. Remember, they didn't have their quarterback. Now, nothing to worry about. It's 14. But Tony Petitti got together and said, you know what? All right. You think 14? We'll only agree to that if our conference champion gets a bye. Well, wait a minute. A bye would mean that you immediately make it to the second round of CFP. That's like we're still in the 14 playoff. It's completely absurd. Trying to give you like the what the TCU coach said about this. This is a quote that I read this weekend that Coca just put back in my ear. Automatic first round buys for the Big Ten and SEC is like the NFL saying the Cowboys get a first round bye since they have more fans than the Bengals. It's not exactly like that, but I appreciate what Sonny Dykes is trying to say, the TCU coach. What they're saying in the SEC and Big Ten right now is our conference champion gets a bye. It's not because they've got the most fans or they have the biggest TV deal. They're saying if you win the conference, you should not be subject to an early dismissal in the CFP new format. You should make it through to the second round. So what the TCU coach should have said is it's the equivalent of the Cowboys winning their division, and no matter where they are in the conference in the NFC, they get a first round bye. That would be the equivalent, not because they have more fans than the Bengals, and that's mixing NFC and AFC. So all in all, it was not the perfect comparison. Let me see. Oklahoma State, Mike Gundy may have gotten it. Let's see what he said. Based on the premise proposed, a team could be undefeated and ranked number one in the country and not receive a first round bye because teams were awarded one before the season even began. All right, Mike Gundy, close, but no cigar for you. The bye that they're talking about would go to the winner of the conference championship game, not the top seeded SEC team or Big Ten team. The team that wins the conference. That's what you should be focusing on. Because what if you have an upset in the conference championship? What if, wait for it, there are three teams in the SEC that are deserving of being in the Final 14? Let's even say four just for S's and G's. Is there a world where the commissioner would have the fifth-ranked team who would not get into the CFP win the conference championship, which means nothing, as you know? Who won the Big Ten championship this year? Who cares? Michigan won the overall title. Can you remember who won the Big Ten championship? Who cares? Who won the SEC championship? Don't know. Don't care. It's all about winning the CFP. Of course, people who went to the schools that won their conference championship say, no, no, David, winning the conference championship is amazing. All right, whatever. What about a scenario where the commissioner has the fifth-rated team win the championship, get the automatic bye, and then the other four have to get in because they're so good? So then you've got five of the 14 from a conference, which means you get that much extra money. Is that type of thing possible? Would any commissioner ever do that? Am I impugning the will of teams to win on the field and telling you that the fix could be in? Oh, perish the thought. Do you think the CFP or the NCAA or anybody should institute a system where there is the possibility of malfeasance? There is no way the SEC and Big Ten deserve to be treated differently. Oh, but they're bigger. I guess the Yankees and Cowboys do get a few things from the commissioner. They get a few. They're treated a bit differently, but not in terms of the ability to win the World Series or the Super Bowl. You can't give someone a leg up to win the national championship. It's totally inappropriate. You can do a bunch of things like look the other way with any sort of actions they're doing, write a BS letter when they're using electronic surveillance. We implore you not to do that. Don't cheat. All right. Whatever. Yankees and Red Sox get letters like that a lot. Maybe not suspend or fine people. There's tons of ways that you can make the playing field not level, but none of them, in my opinion, have a direct correlation to the ability to get the jewelry. So where do I stand? I'll tell you exactly where I stand. NGTH. Not going to happen. They cannot give an automatic first round bye to the winner of the Big Ten championship game and the SEC in the expanded CFP. And if that is what Tony and the SEC want to do, I would call their bluff. Make them leave, start their own conference, start their own championship. Go to the new John Skipper and get yourself a new TV deal. You think ESPN is going to offer to pay billions of dollars for a CFP? And there won't be a provision in it that, by the way, unless the SEC and Big Ten are eligible conferences for the CFP, then we're not paying you this amount of money. And do you think that then for the conferences to get the distributions, that they've got to be part of the CFP? Do you think it's possible that the SEC and Big Ten can go out and form their own league on their own and get the same type of revenue, the same type of governance, the same type of deals as being part of the bigger picture? That sounds very Premier-like, Premier League-like. How did that Super League work out? Thanks for the question, but it's not happening. As a matter of fact, Coca, let's make it an official wait to see. Automatic buys for conference champions of SEC and Big Ten will not happen. That is automatic wait to see. When we tell you something's going to happen, if it does, great. If it doesn't, fine. We're making that our wait to see this year. All right, Kate, ready, Coca? 4-8-69. Wait to see is when we tell you something's going to happen. If it does, great. If it doesn't, fine. Our wait to see for today, Monday, March 4th, is that automatic buys for conference champions of SEC and Big Ten will not happen. Not. What will happen is Caitlin Clark has become the most prolific scorer in college history. Did you watch it? It was pretty cool. Needed 8 points, got it on a bunch of free throws. She's so good. She's turning pro. We covered it last week. She's going to be on the Fever. Her college career is ending. There's nothing more she can do. She passed Pistol Pete Maravich. Don't bother me with she's a woman, he's a man. He had no three-pointers. She did. He did in fewer games. She didn't. I don't want to hear anything more other than the only thing remaining for Caitlin Clark to do this year in her career is to try to win the national championship. That'd be cool. But as you know, you can be the greatest college player, the most prolific scorer, and not win a championship. It's a team game. She has nothing left to prove in college. That's why she left. And that's why she's turning pro. What concerns me about the whole Caitlin Clark situation, and I was thinking about it all weekend long, what is it about people who are so interested in hating on her? Is it because she's a woman? Is it because she's white? Is it because she's Midwestern? What is the urge that people have to try to downplay the accomplishments of women as compared to men? Is it like a big dick contest? Like, I don't understand what people are doing. Why can't you just look at Caitlin Clark and say, never seen anything like this before? And it's true, you haven't. Whether Iowa wins the NCAA tournament this March or doesn't, it will not take away from you have watched the greatest individual player in the history of college basketball. Hard stop. It doesn't matter. Gender, sex, preference, team, year, decade. What pressure she's under, my Lord. Articles came out, we said this Friday, that could they save the WNBA? That's a tall order, but Magic and Bird had to save the NBA, and that was a taller order. But imagine that pressure. And of course, everybody sees color, and I don't know why. Why does Reese have to be Magic and Clark has to be Bird? Maybe Clark plays more like Magic and Reese plays more like Bird. Why is it white and black and color? It doesn't make sense to me. But the pressure of Caitlin Clark to be Larry Bird, to save the entire sport of women's basketball, that's a tough one. Most people fold under the weight of that. Congratulations, Caitlin. That's pretty amazing. All right, we had the Mavs over the Celtics on Friday getting 9.5, just getting 9.5. I think they lost by 70. The Celtics beat the Warriors last night by 52. I think the Celtics have 3 wins of 50 or more points this year. Totally insane. The Celtics are good, and we told you that. But yet, we thought the Mavs would be able to play with them. And it turns out the Mavs could not stay with the Celtics. Nobody can stay with the Celtics. It will be a major upset if the Celtics do not win the title this year. So we are 28-30 We should have taken Verstappen. That was a bet at minus 275 in the Bahrain Grand Prix Saturday morning. We said it was too heavy. We actually wanted to take the field. What a yutz I am. Verstappen got the pole and led lap to lap, lap one to lap 57. But that was not the excitement of the F1 race. The excitement was Christian Horner versus Max Verstappen's father. Max Verstappen's father basically said Max ought to leave Red Bull because it's either him or Horner. Horner's the one who is, we did a whole segment on a Friday. Go back and listen. I don't want to take the time right now, but suffice it to say, something's got to give here with Verstappen and Horner and Verstappen's father. Right now, they're solving it by Verstappen's father missing the race in Saudi Arabia this weekend, and he doesn't miss any of his son's races. Red Bull is trying to figure out what they're going to do with Christian Horner because he's not going quietly into the night. But mark my words, this story's not done. And the wait to see we did with him not being at Red Bull at the start of next season, I'm sticking to that, but I may be off in my timing. There is a problem in F1. It'll be great, great, great for Drive to Survive next season. All right, our pick for today. We are taking the Lakers, giving 1 point to the Oklahoma City Thunder. That may sound crazy because the Thunder are so much better than the Lakers. The Lakers are fighting for a playoff spot. You've got Oklahoma City playing back-to-back, and you have LeBron, who just passed 40,000 points, may be in for a letdown. Did you see LeBron that he reached 40,000 points, which is, and this is not about men versus women. This is about careers. What LeBron did getting 40,000 points in the NBA is far greater than what Caitlin Clark did, far greater than what anybody has done. 3-point champion, number of 3-pointers, any of it. I will take LeBron and longevity over anything because his level of greatness for the amount of time that he's been great is awe-inspiring. So I waited till 4 minutes left in the show to drop this on you, Coca. And I didn't know how to do it, but I'm going to drop it on you right now. I have been relentless during debates, during conversations with friends and family and strangers about GOAT Jordan versus LeBron. Relentless. It is all Jordan. I've never wavered. For whatever reason, last night as I was preparing for today's show, I'm thinking about LeBron. I'm reading about the number of years he's been in the league, the number of years he's averaged 25 points or more, the consistency of his career. Ben Golliver in the Washington Post tweeted something that was just, it changed me, I guess. He got his first 10,000 points in 368 games. He just got the last 10,000 points in 368 games. That means that his brilliance at the beginning of his career when he was young is the same as the brilliance of the end of his career when he's not young. The consistency of that. The second 10,000 he did in 10 fewer games, 358. The third 10,000 it took, whoa, 381. Think about that consistency. 368, 358, 381, 368. 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000. Do I wish he had more than 4 rings? Yeah. Do I wish he hadn't lost as many times in the finals? Yes. Is it hard to go 6-0 as Jordan did? Yes. Did I ever fear LeBron the way I feared Jordan? No. Jordan with the ball at the end of the game, you lose. He finds a way, whether dishing or scoring. Did I watch LeBron as much as I watched Jordan? Yes. As a matter of fact, I was fortunate enough to see LeBron in his 4 years with the Heat from the very first row. But for the first time this weekend, I wavered. So now I have to go back and I have to redo my internal GOAT debate. And I'm going to. Because A, it's fun to do, not for content, not because all the other gas bags are doing it, just because it's my head. It's how do I react to players? How do they make me think about the game or feel about the game? That's the best kind of debate to have. It really doesn't matter to me what Barkley says or Kenny Smith or Perkins or any of the guys. I'm focused, or Stephen A., I'm focused on the way I'm reacting to players. And when LeBron passed 40,000 points, it just hit differently. Congratulations. Before we end today, there's been a lot of tributes to Chris Mortensen, the ESPN insider, who passed away quite prematurely at the age of 72. I didn't know Chris, but I was fascinated by the insider. He was really the beginner of the insider, and it's led to this amazing business where people are paid millions of dollars to have sources and to tweet out things before anyone else has them. The competition where being first is more important than being right. And I remember the difference with Chris Mortensen being in sports. I was running a team. And I remember thinking to myself that when you're dealing with Chris Mortensen on NFL stuff, and he was a big baseball fan, you didn't have to worry about, was he being first? Was he off? Was he just trying to get out there? When Chris Mortensen said something, that's how it was. Period. Insiders these days, they're so busy jumping all over themselves. The reason why you're seeing all this outpouring of love is A, he was such a great man, but B, he was doing it right. He would get the stories, disseminate the stories, and they'd be stories, not 100-word clips. He had stories. 72 is way too young to die, and he'll be missed. And I should tell you that this is not me saying that Shams or Rappaport or any of the other insiders and Passan or any of the other insiders, Kenny Rosenthal, of any of the sports, it's not to say they're not good at what they do, but think about the way you do your job versus the way Chris Mortensen did his. And it's simply a function of the times. All right, what's next? Nothing's next. Thank you, Coca. All right. Let me just tell you something funny. I need a new clock because I had 8:36 in my head and it's 8:46. I think I'm going to have to wear my glasses. Eye doctor. I have an appointment this week, actually, or after the Oscars. It's just business. We'll be back tomorrow. I can't really see. This is nothing personal.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text LOSE to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text LOSE to 200-300. That's LOSE to 200-300. LOSE to 200-300.